everyone. I'd like to call to order the June 1st meeting of the Berkeley County Board of Commissioners. Welcome to everyone. It's nice to see some faces in the audience tonight. For those of you that are on by way of Zoom, I'm going to be doing a roll call. Everyone is present, but you'll be able to hear their voices and know that they're here. So Commissioner Atkins, say here.
Here.
Yes, thank you. All right. Commissioner Wesson.
Present.
Commissioner Trent.
Here and present.
Commissioner Roberts.
Here and present.
Thank you. And I'm Chair Lee. Thank you. The invocation and pledge of allegiance is going to be done tonight by Commissioner Ron Wesson. And we're glad to have him back with us this evening.
Thank you, Chair Lee. It's good to be here. A lot of you know I've been out for the last 2 weeks, 8 weeks, recovering from back surgery, and it's great to have been able to connect via Zoom, but being here in person is an awful lot better. So it's I'm delighted to be with you. Let us pray. Heavenly Father and Eternal God, we bow our heads in humble submission to your will. Father, I come this evening just to say thank you. Thank you for all of your many, many blessings. Thank you for the opportunity and the blessing of service. It is wonderful to be of service to the citizens of this great county, beautiful Berkeley. And Lord God, I ask that you would give us all tonight an extra dose of humility, of gentleness, of patience, of tolerance, and most of all, of love. Not only in how we deal with each other and communicate, but how we do the business of the citizens of this great county. Father, again, I ask you to bless us, be here with us, and that everything we might do might be pleasing in your sight. I ask these blessings in the name of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Join me in the pledge, if you would.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner West. The next on our agenda is a 3-minute public comment section. Each person comes to the podium, announces their name and address, and they have 3 minutes to make any public comments. Are there any from our audience at this time? Okay. Ms. LaShonda, are there any public comments that has been sent to you?
Shirley, there's no public comments at this time.
Okay. I'll just remind everyone that there's another opportunity at the end of the meeting. All right, so next, first on our agenda is public hearing for the closing of a portion of State Road 1123, Bullet Club Road. So I'll take a motion to go into a public hearing.
Make a motion. We're going to public hearing for this.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We are now in public hearing. Are there any comments about closing the portion of State Road 1123, which is Bullet Club Road? Did you receive anything, LaShonda, through email or via Zoom?
No, Charlie.
All right. I'll take a motion to come out of public hearing.
Make a motion to come out.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. So there is a order in your handout. See if I can find it. And I won't read it in detail. It'll be part of the agenda package when it goes online. Has anybody got a page number? Yes, thank you. I was looking at the back of that section. So order closing a portion of Bullet Club Road. And like I said, it's lengthy, but
I will take a motion to approve this order.
Before the motion, Chair, okay. I would just like to speak just in favor of this. It's important to know that the portion of Billup Road, Club Road, being requested to be closed is from the ownership border of the citizen who's requesting it, and all of the closed part resides on property that he owns, and it does not dead end anywhere that citizens would have a right to go if we went to the water or went to some other public place. It's all encompassed in land that he owned and his club. So it is of no detriment to citizens. And in fact, you know, there's been a lot of dumping and things like that on that road, and he wants to make sure it's kept clean for his club. And I think it's a great thing to do, and the DOT has already approved it, but it's up to us. So thank you.
So I'll take a take that as a motion to accept this order.
And to our knowledge, nobody's made an objection.
Right, no.
I'll make the motion to approve, please.
I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
So there is a map in our package that's online that you can view, and any supporting documents for any of that. All right, next on our agenda is North Carolina Hope Program presentation. Mr. Chris Nelson is with us in person, and Ms. Hogshead and Burns are with us via Zoom from Raleigh. So welcome to Ms. Hogshead and Ms. Burns and Mr. Nelson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lee. It's a privilege to be here representing the state of North Carolina in my own county. However, I'm not empowered to speak for NCOR. On the screen with Zoom right now, we have Ms. Nima Sheena, and she will be speaking to us about the program of HOPE, which is the hope of the prevention of for renters, or prevention of eviction of our tenants. Ms. Nima Sheena, we're listening.
All right, thank you. Ms. Burns.
How are you all? Lord could not be with you all tonight. I am familiar with a couple of you all. We've reached out to you all for the rebuild program. So once again, we are here. I am from a small town. I'm from Bladen County. So my heart goes out to Chris. The fact that, you know, he wanted to make sure that his hometown had access to the most pertinent, up-to-date information about the program. So he's a true asset. So you all should be proud of him. He's doing exactly what I would do. But the only reason why I'm here tonight, as things change, as they move along, we never try to put our specialists on the spot. My hope is that the federal government makes no more changes so that in the event you all need an update, we can say, yes, Chris, by all means, shine for your hometown. So my first question is very quick. Can I share my screen with everyone? Is that allowed?
Yes.
Woo. It says host disabled participant screen sharing. So if somebody could give me access, if not, I could talk you all through it.
Now, Ms. LaShonda, can you let her share her screen?
Yes, ma'am, Charlie, working on it now.
Oh, wonderful. Hi. And what I will go ahead and say to everyone is the slides were very long. I think when we email Juan and when I email Chris, it's about 40 some slides. What I want you all to know is that I have truncated it down. And so, yeah, that one's not mine. That one's somebody else, but I'll wait. And I will go ahead and get somewhat started because as some of you all know, I'm a county commissioner as well. And the last thing you need is somebody taking up time on your program. So, I'm in Durham. We're in budget right now. So I've been in meetings all day. So I know your pain and I don't want to be between you all and suffer. So before we're allowed to, I keep checking, it keeps saying no, but it's fine. I will make these slides available. The most important thing that you all need to know is that the objective of the program was to provide housing stability to vulnerable renters. So when we look at this funding that came down through CARES, when we look at the funding that came down through ERAP, the primary goal was to provide housing stability to vulnerable renters. And you all know during the pandemic, the more we could keep people inside, the more we could control the spread of the virus. So some of you all are familiar with the HOPE program from the last iteration. What I can tell you all is that we have made a lot of changes. We recognized during the first iteration that there were individuals that just we thought we were going to only have about 17 or 18,000 applications. We ended up having about 55,000 applications. And when we got those 55,000 applications, we knew we had to front load individuals so that we could get that funding out the door. We actually thought we had it until December 31st. So we got a lot of community partners together, and it took a long time. We've learned from some of the, we've learned and picked up some best practices. So this time, a lot of our stuff is in-house. We are not working with any local partners to actually process checks. We have our own call center now, so there's a dedicated phone line, so you don't have to worry about calling 211. Make sure you all have that phone number, have a dedicated email. We have our own check writing apparatus. The check writing company that we have can print tens of thousands of checks a day. So last week when HOPE opened on Monday, Tuesday, we were actually sending checks out the door by Thursday, Friday. And for some of you all, you know, the gap last time was 3 or 4 months. Not saying it's always going to be 3 or 4 days, because we might get inundated and pushed, but just know that we've picked that up. We also have we have English and Spanish materials that we can hand out. The biggest thing that everybody wants to know is, what is the eligibility? That's what folks want to know. Right now, we're telling people providing identification is optional. So applicants will need to provide their lease agreement or other proof of rental situation and utilities. So we do recognize that some people have oral leases. So we will need at least some type of narrative or some type of attestation that says, I rent from this person, especially if you don't have a paper lease. Your household income must be at or below 50% of the area median income. I know we get a lot of questions about that, but what we learned last time, 91% of those individuals who apply for HOPE were 50% AMI and below. And so Congress has charged us, Treasury has charged us to prioritize that population of people. Do you have to be behind in your rent? Last time we said you had to be at least 30 days behind. Well, we're telling people you do not have to already be behind in rent. You must have either been late sometime after April 1st, 2020, or you are facing homelessness or possible eviction. We recognize that there are some people who might have sold the car. They might not be paying another bill just so that they can stay in the house. So if you can demonstrate, aha, it's allowing me to screen share now. Thank you for whoever just sent me that message. And we are going to go ahead and share. Can you all see my screen?
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. Okay, because I know this, if she's going to talk through this whole thing, we are going to have a problem. Okay, can we see this now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So these are the key aspects of the program. In order to get utility assistance, you must also be a renter. So last time you could actually be a homeowner and access our utility assistance. That is not the case this time. Utility assistance will only be given to individuals who are actually renters. Applicants can receive up to 9 months of back owed rent. So we're doing 12 months in total. Any combination of 12, so it could be 9 back, 3 forward, or it could be at least 1 back and 11 forward. So there are some options there. Last time we were only able to do 6 months. This time we're able to do 12 months of assistance. So, and again, this is subject to funding availability. I'm going to move through a couple more of these. I will share these phone numbers. So method of delivery, individuals are allowed to go to hopenc.gov. And so there are two kind of portals to the application. If you applied last time, just so you know, there can't be a duplication of benefits. So let's say you applied last time, you live in Bertie County and we paid 3 months of your rent. Well, you're not going to get 12 months. You would actually only get 9 months. Well, if you got 6 months, we can only give you 6 more months. So we would subtract the funding that you got last time, and then we would give you whatever you're available for this go round. But we would subtract what you got beforehand, or if you got it from another source. I don't think that would happen with Bertie. Some of the bigger counties that have some of their own programs, that's where that duplication of benefits comes in. But I don't think Bertie has that issue. The next slide, we already talked about it just being rental assistance and utilities. I kind of started to move ahead because I didn't want to take up too much time. We talked about the 50% AMI. You have to actually occupy the rental rental property as your primary residence and be named on the party of the lease or the rental agreement. So I know that that one was a hard one for us last time. And we do have specialists to review these in the event, you know, some folks say, well, I have my name on here, but it's my married name and I'm divorced now. So don't, if you get worried about stuff like that, we have hope specialists that review stuff. That's why we have folks like your wonderful neighbor, Chris. Who cannot apply? Landlords cannot apply. Homeowners cannot apply. Applicants that have not been impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. So how do we figure that out? That April 1, 2020 deadline, we know anybody that most likely if you hit an economic, if it was an economic downturn, health downturn post that day, in the event you have been late on your rent since last January, that is not connected to COVID. Right. So that is an example of somebody who has not been affected by the pandemic. These funds are specifically for individuals affected by the pandemic. Applicants in counties or belonging to tribes that receive their own allocation of ERA funds. I will go over that at another slide. And this is the slide. So right now, you all don't have to worry about this, but these are counties right now that the HOPE program is not serving. We actually served those counties last time, and serving them this time, 60% of our applicants, I think, or about 60% of our applications came from these counties. These counties are actually large enough that they got their own tranche of money for Treasury, and they are actually running their own programs right now. The main reason why I brought this slide up is in the event you actually have individuals in your county that might be members of any of these tribes. I know we have 9 in North Carolina, but these 5 tribes actually, just like these larger counties, got their own tranche of money. So please let anyone in your county know who might be Halawasaponi, Lumbee, Waccamaw Siouan, Kahari, or Eastern Band of Cherokee Indian, that there's an opportunity for them to apply through their tribes. We talked about the 12 months already. We talked about how we could do it the 9 months in arrears. Please note, it is paid directly to the landlord on behalf of the applicant. So that is where the funding goes. At this juncture, still, the funding goes directly to the landlord. It doesn't go to the tenant. Talked about arrears. Aha, existing fees. So what other fees do we pay? Because there are a series of fees that we do not pay, but one that we do pay. Pet fees, insurance fees, utility fees, or other fees that were pre-existing that are part of the rent agreement already. So if your rental fee for your apartment was $500 and it was $50 a month for the dog, it's $550. So we covered that fee as well. Covering security deposits that have been applied to back old rent. So again, not up front, but anything that is applied to back old rent, we can cover those security deposits. The documentation that you're going to need. You need a lease agreement. A lease agreement will be required to be uploaded when the applicant applies for assistance. We recognize that everybody doesn't have a scanner, so you're able to take pictures of these things with cell phones and send them up there. Like I said before, the leasing agreement will need the tenant's name, a rental address, and the amount owed a month at minimum. And in the absence of a lease, these are examples of folks who have an oral lease, a written statement from the landlord is acceptable. And you still just have to include those things. And NCORE has developed a template for landlords and applicants to use so they can fill that information in. And then we would also just need to see proof of payment of some sort. Landlord agreement, key points. So everybody always wants to ask about this one. They said there were too many strings attached to the first program. What I can tell you is 92% of landlords accepted our agreements. So that misinformation about it just being too cumbersome. If you go to other states, we actually have some of the most lax regulations. So what we ask landlords to do, keep that space safe and inhabitable. And they agree not to evict for non-payment within 60 days of the last month of assistance offered by the program. So let's just say, for instance, the last month that we were offering to you was July. We're asking the landlord, upon receipt of this money, you can't kick that person out for August and September, so 60 days. Landlord agrees to work with the tenant to form a payment plan if necessary for any rent not covered. And it confirms that the landlord has not received payment for the rent amount due from any other source. So that means if somehow, again, that wouldn't happen in Bertie, I'm not seeing how it would happen, but let's just say you did have somebody who might be from one of those Native American tribes and they got January, March, and April paid for, and that landlord took that money and then the application for HOPE came through and we were paying those same months, they would have to let us know so that there's no duplication of benefits. So they would agree not to take it. Like I said, they can't increase rent or fees for the duration of the lease. They have to maintain a safe and habitable dwelling. They have to pay any utilities owed if that is part of the lease. So if somebody's lease has light and gas in it, if we give them the amount of money for light and gas and rent, then it is incumbent upon that landlord to actually pay that funding. The utility assistance, utilities like gas, water, provides emergency utilities assistance. Again, it is paid directly to the utility provider on behalf of the applicant. It pays for backhoe utilities only, so we're not paying stuff for it. And it only covers critical utilities. We've gotten questions about broadband. So many of the broadband questions, so many broadband plans were hooked to phone, and it was just going to be hard to kind of splice that. Again, same thing for utilities that you saw for rent. You have to be 50% AMI. You have to occupy that dwelling as your primary residence. You have to be experiencing the difficulty paying that utility bill. And you must apply for and require rent assistance to qualify. So again, just reiterating, no one who is a homeowner can apply for this. And we're coming to the end. So what utility assistance do we cover? Natural gas, electricity, water, sewer and wastewater. So those are the ones that we cover. And the award limit. So we do have limits on this. Right now, the biggest thing is to look at this chart down here. So awards made for the utility count towards the 12-month limit. So we're doing this in quarters. The applicant reports the amount that they owe to the utility company. And let's just say, for instance, your quarters are 3 months. Well, on average, we will not pay more than $510 for 3 months of electricity. For gas, we will not pay more than $135 for gas for 3 months. For water, we will not pay more than $105 for 3 months. And the same thing for wastewater. So just think about, this is the amount that we will do, the max amount that we will do in quarters. And right now we're only doing it in 3 months in a rate iterations. And hopefully the program may eventually get up to 12 months of assistance for this. But right now, instead of doing like the 12 months or 15 months that you're seeing, we're doing these in 3 month iterations. And honestly, So are the rental agreements, but we're trying to keep people in their homes. So I will stop there. I know I went really, really fast, but I remember Juan said I had 5 to 10 minutes. I know that we are past that. This is the email address that individuals can use. I don't want to hold your program up, but if anybody has any questions for Chris or I, ask Mr. Wesson.
Are there any questions for Ms. Burns?
Absolutely. Ms. Burns, Mr. Trent, how are you?
Good, and you?
Landlords that have filled out applications that were back in January, and they were approved, accepted, as filled out, completed, and W-9s, and they still have not received checks, and now they're starting all over again with people that have been, hypothetically, can't be put out of the house due to the fact there was a freeze on evictions and things of that nature, okay? Mm-hmm. And so that was for 2020. They filled it out in January, early February. So that was for 2020. And then now the sequence has kind of started over again. And so how did they find out where their application is at and their W-9s they filled out? Some people have called and they said, well, they're in our finance office, but it's been 6 months and nobody's received anything. And the cycle keeps moving forward.
May I respond to that, Ms. Nemashima, because I work in finance. And you're certainly welcome to override me.
Oh, go for it, Chris. I was going to jump, but no, save me from myself. Go ahead, friend.
Absolutely. Commissioner Trent, that is a fabulous question. I've been with the program since November, and I, in the beginning, did intake. In other words, people, whether they called 211 or went through a community partner or went directly online and did it, I processed their application. I was the one who allotted the award, so to speak. Then in February of this year, I was voluntold to move from intake or program over to finance. And it was quite the interesting process. I'm a prior military officer, combat officer, and I watched what happened in the invasion of Iraq. And this is what NCOR did. NCOR took a Cold War style of doing assistance. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of flying that airplane, they had to make it conventional. using, or make it unconventional, excuse me. That's what happened. We were inundated with using in-course finance program through Excel spreadsheets, touching 20 different people before a check got wrote in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. MS-DOS, and y'all know this from living in Bertie County, okay, because our teachers have not been able to successfully reach our students mm-hmm. at home. Using MS-DOS and Microsoft Excel, I cannot tell you the number of payments I personally submitted. Some of them were even from Bertie County, only to get a second additional duty of responding to something called Hope Inquiry at ncdps.gov, where people like yourself, Commissioner, are asking, where's this money? And people ask me, where's my money? That is the problem. The solution is what she said. Instead of using, I'll just use the term, our government pay system from Yonkers Road and Boulevard, we have taken some of that allotment, or they have taken some of that allotment, and they have hired out a payroll or an accounting company. In other words, what I just processed on last Thursday, the check was wrote today. Previously, like, for example, your tenant, we have our attorney here, Mr. Smith, heard the same thing. Is this LTS or LTA landlord-tenant agreement that they signed, how can they make me keep suffering as a landlord? I mean, they feel like they're being bent over the barrel there. What happened was we would continue to submit those payments. Like, one of my additional duties is I respond to the email inquiries from commissioners, from congressmen, from the governor's office. And then I personally submit on what we call the financial research team, the direct payment that goes up through, I'll use the term chain of command, and they make the payment. I'm right here as your asset for this county. I can help get it paid.
Can you give me your full name and a number that I can call you tomorrow? Because I'm going to discuss the individuals, okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Possible.
My address is, if you're
email.
Familiar with, I'm just kidding. Chris Nelson. I was going to say.
I would give out your phone number, Christopher. But just to add on, one, that was the perfect answer. And, you know, I used to work at DMVA. I love when my military folks answer because they're up for no nonsense. But what I was going to say, I was going to ask for the names. I'm happy Chris has. So that means I don't have to do it tomorrow. What I will say is, yes, he'll be able to discuss it with you. And he knows that. And the only reason I'm saying this to every commissioner, because I'm seeing a few names on here who have called me about Rebuild and other programs. Make sure y'all don't put Chris in a precarious situation, because one of the things, and he knows this, and you all know it, if it is such a sensitive situation, give us the name and we will work to try to work it out with the person. But since we haven't been authorized to communicate on behalf of that person with anybody in the county, as far as I know, he's not going to be able to give you every detail. And some of the things that he's not, some, everything he said is right, but it could be something just as simple as it did not get in the mail. There was an elderly gentleman. We sent him his check 3 times in Lillington. Like, we actually remember when we sent it, and it never got to him. It was to the point one of our chiefs and I had to get in a car and drive it to Lillington to get to him. So we do know that fraud is also very real. So those are just some things. So I am happy that you brought that up. You all are the biggest advocates for the folks in your county. So yeah, get those names to him. We do have some stragglers out there. I had a lady today, you know, we're not operating in Charlotte this iteration, but we've sent her check twice. That check actually went to her landlord and was going into the wrong post office box. It was 2 checks in the next one. So sometimes incidents do happen. So I'll stop there, but know that we are doing our best. If you know somebody, that's for every other commissioner on here, anybody else, if you know somebody who did not get their funding for the first iteration, last I checked, we're at 97-98% paid on all of those. By all means, we only started back up because we knew that the issue was so severe and that we knew that the funding was coming. But we have not forgotten about those folks doing HOPE 1.0. And I'll stop there.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I want to say to Ms. Burns and to Chris, because it's great having a local person here that we can deal with, right?
Thanks.
And programs like this are only as good as when there are issues, like from landlords or from tenants, to make those issues known, take them up the chain so that they can be dealt with. So, but having a local person here is tremendous. I also want to give a shout out to Ms. Burns. A lot of you may not know, but Ms. Burns has been a proponent of supporting Bertie County for a long time. A lot of you may have seen a lot of new homes go up in Bertie under something called Rebuild NC. And Ms. Burns was a not only a proponent, but worked within Rebuild NC, and then came out to Bertie to make sure that we were aware of the program and that we got our applications in. And when you see these houses being rebuilt around the county, that's Rebuild NC. And Ms. Burns, thank you. And
it's still open. I still have money. It's still open.
And in Washington, North Carolina, in the Walmart shopping center, you want to go talk to them. So thank you, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nelson, for joining us.
And, thank you all. Thank you, Ms. Burns.
Yeah, we look forward to a nice working relationship with all of you. Yeah. Thank you. Next on our agenda is the Windsor North Carolina Conference presentation from Ms. Lohman, CEO of Lohman Creative Services. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, Bernice Lohman. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm Bernice. I also have two other hostess, co-hostess who are assisting me with the 2021 Windsor, North Carolina Conference, which is Pastor Gregory Gillum. He did step away. He was on for a minute, but Pastor Melvin Rasko is present with me here right now, and yours truly, Bernice. And I want to talk to you guys about the Windsor 2021 Windsor, North Carolina Conference. Thank you for this opportunity. I promise you I'll be really quick. A little bit about it. It is being held in Windsor, North Carolina this year, August 13th and 14th. It's going to be a Friday and Saturday. The mission of this Windsor, North Carolina conference is to bring economical and spiritual growth to the people in and near Windsor, North Carolina for no charge. This is a free conference that myself, along with Pastor Gillum and Pastor Melvin Rasko, along with other business partners who have said, I want to join in with you. I love this vision that you do want to give back to where you're from. We all are natives of Windsor, North Carolina, and the objective is to give back to this wonderful city where we are from. So you'll see here on the screen the objective for August 13th and 14th, the outline of it for Friday. We are having it scheduled for prayer, praise, business workshops, and revival. That is the structure of it for Friday and Saturday. Being the day will be business workshops, and during the night, we will have a nightly spiritual revival. And this is being held at Pastor Gregory Gillum's ministry, World Harvest Christian Church. The times are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. for the business workshops. And then we have the vendors from 4 to 5 p.m. And then there's the nightly revival from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Here's a little about the partner, Pastor Gregory Gillum. I won't read all of this for the sake of time, but this is provided, this entire slideshow is provided on our website, wnconference.com. And here's Pastor Melvin Rasko, another partner. He's also, as I stated before, a native of Windsor, North Carolina, and yours truly, myself, born and raised in Windsor, North Carolina. And you'll learn more about each of us again on our website. So the brief schedule is business workshops, vendors, revival, praise and worship. Structure and four of those structure scheduled for the 2021 Windsor, North Carolina Conference. And with the business workshops, it details educational resources from credit restoration, business startups, resume building, business marketing, book publishing, life insurance, health, fitness, youth empowerment, etc. We've partnered with several organizations in and surrounding Windsor, North Carolina, who has agreed to come in and to teach workshops to the community. With those, we also have given the opportunity to those vendors, those workshop presenters, for them to have a vendor space where they can also give more information, educational resources for our attendees. In the night, there are two pastors in the area who have partnered with us, along with our partners, Pastor Gregory and Pastor Melvin Rasko. We've also asked other two pastors, well-known pastors in the area who said, we will do your revivals for those nights, Friday and Saturday. And so those are what those nightly revivals are, getting back to our first love, Christianity, God being our first love. So it is a business workshop and a revival during the night, which people have the option to choose if they want to do either or. It's totally up to those individuals. And then there's a component of praise and worship where it will be singing. I've grown up, all of us can say that we've grown up from some way of spiritual songs and singing and helping us to be more uplifted. And so we thought to bring this back as a component of the conference, as well as the workshops with adoration and giving praises back to God. Okay, here's a total of our workshops: 14, credit restoration, business startup, church planning, resume building, media ministry, branding and marketing your business, book publishing, life insurance, health, nutrition, grant writing, youth empowerment, the legal system, employment, and home ownership. Due to the sake of time, I won't include all of the graphics that have been created, but they are 14 to resemble the 14 workshops. Here's one that we've partnered with Deborah Morris of the Martin Community College, who will be giving a workshop to teach career goals and employment opportunities. We've also partnered with Roanoke Chowan Community College, Ms. Jaquita Stevenson, who's a coordinator of Roanoke Chowan Community College, and she will be coming in and teaching the community resume building. In fact, she will not only teach them resume building, but she, when you come in into her workshop class, you will leave out with a paper in your hand of your resume already built that she's building right on the spot. We've also partnered with Bert T. YMCA. The coordinator for that is Casey Owens. He will also be coming in to teach a workshop to our youth. It'll be solely more of youth empowerment and to help our youth, which we do know youth everywhere needs this, but he's definitely targeting and doing an awesome, amazing job in Windsor, North Carolina. So we've asked him to partner along with us, and he gave us his definite yes. We've also partnered with the local business, Taylor Made Publishing of Windsor, North Carolina. She serves in Windsor, Greenville, and several other areas. Miss Diane Taylor, she's the CEO of TaylorMade Publishing. She'll come in and she'll teach a workshop on book publishing. And we have Indian Woods Missionary Baptist Church, Reverend Braxton Mercer, which is one of Indian Woods Missionary Baptist Church media professionals. So we've asked him to come in because we do realize not only businesses need help with technology and media, but also ministries does as well. So he'll be teaching the media ministry and technology skills to those pastors in the local area. We've also partnered with Paradise Funeral Home. D. Omar Purcell, he's the co-owner of Paradise Funeral Home, and he'll be coming in to teach about the proper burial. So we do know the importance of getting the right education, not only while we're living, but when we're passing on, our family needs to also know this information. And so we have asked the company to come in and to teach this this workshop for our community. We've asked Antonio Gregory with Gregory Credit Service to come in and to teach credit restoration. And so he says definitely yes. In fact, everyone who is listed as a workshop presenter has given us their definite yes and have been sharing with the community thus far, and they're following as well. So we do welcome Antonio Gregory, who will be teaching our community credit restoration. And Gary Corden, he and his wife will be in attendance, and they will be teaching home ownership. And that's just a few, although there you saw only a few. There are 14 total workshops. And for an update, COVID-19, we've been asked, what would you provide some type of safety security for this 2021 Windsor, North Carolina conference? And so we wanted to add this here for the presentation today, that there will be temperature checked in. When you come in into the facility, you will be checked for temperature. There's also face masks that's highly recommended. And I do also want to include that the church that we're having the facility Pastor Gregory's church holds up to 200 for the capacity, but due to security and safety for the COVID-19, we wanted to follow the CDC guidelines, and we are only allowing 100 people to be in this building that will give us time to have a space, a social distance space during these workshops. And also there's a sanitized machine that Pastor Gregory and his wife mentioned that is there also at the ministry that will also be available for the 2021 Windsor, North Carolina conference. Okay. So what we need, if you're just listening to this or watching this and you're wondering, okay, this sounds great. What help do you need? We're in need of more ministry and business partners. What they do, they come in and they share their resources. They share with people who they know they're following, those who may need this workshop, those who need these resources. We also are in need of a media team, those who will love to come in and to help us with social media. We understand people are not in person all the time. And so we want to make sure that it's available also on social media platforms as well. And we're in need of promotional items. So when people do come in those doors, they have some type of bag, something to bring, to leave out with them. And so we're in need of cups, pens, keychains, bags. So if you have a company and you have more than enough of these promotional items, we would love to add those into bags for the 2021 Windsor North Carolina conference. And here is our information. Our website is wncconference.com. You'll see the presentation and more at the website, as well as our social media, Facebook. We also have a new YouTube channel as well. And there is our email address, Pastor Melvin Rasko. If you're needing any questions or wanting to help volunteering in any type of planning with this, that is his email address, melvin@wncconference.com. Pastor Gregory, if you are a pastor or a minister, clergy, and you want to be involved, or you also want to be a vendor and you're non-clergy, he will be definitely a person to connect to, Gregory@wncconference.com. And yours truly, if you're just needing some type of general information, registration information, anything related to social media and the overall of this conference, either of or us can assist you, as well as myself at info@wncconference.com. And here is the contact information. And that is all. I try to wrap it up in about 7 minutes. I think I got it. But
yeah, great presentation. What a great opportunity for the citizens of Burton County.
Thank you.
When I looked at the list of workshops that you were offering, I went, wow. Great workshops, great topics for
thank you,
Burton County. So thank you so much for doing this in our community.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah, Ms. Lohman, first of all, I want to say shout out to you from Pleasant Oak Missionary Baptist Church.
My church, yes, thank you so much.
But I want to say to the citizens, please, you know, August 13th and 14th, please take advantage of this. It's only as good as having the citizens there who need this and who want this information. These folks have put a lot of time into doing this. Please show up. That's what's important. If you have any need for any of these services, please show up. And I just want to thank you, Bernice, and also to Reverend Rasko and Gillum to accepting my invitation to come and let the citizens know. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Anybody else?
Alexa, this is gone.
Are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Robinson, born and raised Windsor. I just said thank you for a sharing with the county and the citizens. I hope that the surrounding counties, you know, my county and Swan County, Hereford County, is listening in, and that maybe they also can come over and enjoy the service and the trial.
Yes, please. Everybody, come on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again, everyone.
So next on the agenda is the state of COVID-19 and vaccinations in Burton County by Albemarle Regional Health Services. I know I saw Ms. Stuke. Ashley, is Mr. Battle with us also?
I am, Madam Chair. Can you hear me all right?
I can. Thank you, sir.
Excellent. Thank you for having us. And commissioners, thank you as well. We appreciate the opportunity to give you all an update on the COVID vaccine campaign and the current status. We are very fortunate that our percent positives that are at an annual low. We haven't seen rates this low since this time last year. And I've asked Ashley Stoop to give us an update. So she's got a slide deck that she'll be sharing with us. But just want to preface that you'll see some numbers about percentages of people who've been vaccinated. We've recently, with Pfizer being expanded to 12 and up instead of 18 and up, you'll notice that it looks like we've reached fewer people. And that's because we're folding in now that 12 and up population. So we've kind of had to move the goalpost there. But that is going to be a challenge that we are going to, of course, accept and meet. We've already been working with our school partners to plan some back to school campaigns. With it being a two-shot series, it was just logistically impossible by the time the CDC made their notice of approval there for us to get that second shot in before the kids left for the summer. But we do have Pfizer stock in all 8 counties. We're accepting appointments. So any children that want to go ahead and get it ahead of that larger scale vaccine ramp up when the kids return in the fall, we are able to service those folks over the summer. But for right now, I will turn it over to Ashley Stoop, and then we'll certainly entertain any questions that you all may have.
Thank you.
Thanks. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Great. Well, I have the slide set up, and I've also sent a copy to Mr. Juan Vaughn so he can share these with you all as well. But as you can see here, we do have the case breakdown. This is a table that you all have seen many times now, and we are very excited to see those active cases continue to go down. This table right here shows a look back over the last 6 months. And so when we send out our weekly surveillance report, this is typically the graph that you all see. However, I did want to include this one because, as Mr. Betts noted, really we wanted to take a look and look historically. And so what I've added here, this is a look back over the entire pandemic, and I have added in that yellow line, which is the baseline. So as you can see, really since March, we have been below our baseline for the entire pandemic. And as Mr. Betts noted, we are at levels that we really haven't seen since last year at this time. And that's very exciting because really we did begin to see those upticks, you know, with some of the more social gatherings. However, as the winter months came into play, we really began to see this virus transition and behave more like a seasonal virus. And so I think that's really where we're going. As we know, with pandemics, it is very common to see waves in activity, but we are very encouraged by the fact that our evidence-based practices as far as the hand hygiene and mask and social distancing, those have worked, but now we have the vaccine. So if we can keep these vaccination numbers up, and even with that moving goalpost, if we can keep trudging forward, educate our communities, and really encourage more vaccinations, we should continue to see these trends. I won't read all of these slides to you, but you will have this. You know, we are encouraged by the science behind the vaccine development. This has been a situation where the science behind the vaccine really has been in development for over a decade. And so we are seeing some amazing breakthroughs in the manufacturing and distribution of this vaccine that will likely impact many other vaccines and illnesses as we move forward. So it's very encouraging. We continue to learn more every day and we continue to update the science, but what we are seeing is very promising data. It is really tried and true on the safety and efficacy of these vaccines. You can see here, we do now have the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. If you get a copy of these, all of these links are active and link you right back to the CDC website. And so Pfizer is available for 12 and older. The others are for 18 and older. The Pfizer and Moderna are both two shots, whereas Johnson & Johnson is one. and you are considered to be fully vaccinated about 2 weeks after your final shot. So, you know, it does take time for the vaccine itself to replicate in your system and to really offer that full immunity. And so that's why we do note that full 2 weeks after the final vaccine. The benefits, obviously, it does keep you from getting COVID. Really, the primary piece that we are seeing with all of the vaccines, it is extremely effective in preventing severe illness and death. And that is one thing that I think we can all agree on, is that this virus has impacted so many people in so many different ways, and we have really seen severe illness and death. And so the vaccine is very, very effective in that area. You may still get sick, but we are not seeing those severe illness rates like we have been in other situations. Once you're fully vaccinated, you can start doing more. You know, you also, if, you know, we've come to you guys in the past and given you the guidance on isolation and quarantine. If you are fully vaccinated and you have been exposed to someone who is sick, you do not have to quarantine. So that is definitely a positive there. It is a way to build protection, and it really is showing and proving to be effective against other strains of this virus. And we will continue to see shifts and drifts in the virus. That's just the way these viruses act, just like the flu. So it's important for us to continue to build that immunity. Again, it truly is a safe and effective tool. When we look at our vaccination rates, you can see here, this is looking at 12 and older who are partially vaccinated. So this means the total in our region who have received at least one dose of the two dose vaccines. And when we look at this, the map shows the data from ARHS. So these are the number of shots our local health department has given in each of the counties. So that's our administration data. The partner data, we are pulling in information from the allocation data from the state and from some federal allocations. We have been in contact with, you know, for instance, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and others to really understand the other vaccines that are in our community. So you can see the partially vaccinated, 12 and older, we're close to that 50%. As far as fully vaccinated, so obviously two doses for those two dose vaccines or the one dose of the Johnson & Johnson, we are at just over 48%. And again, the map showing ARHS specific data and partners showing, you know, that larger group and partners. We also wanted to provide this slide because I know a lot of you have looked at the state website. And so what that data does is it pulls from the CVMS system. And CVMS is the state required reporting system for all state administered vaccines. So what we've done here is this data is current as of the 25th. And so you can see Bertie County is actually one of the front runners for the ARHS region when you compare it to our regional data. We have been very encouraged, and we know that this has a lot to do with our partnership with Bertie County. Our emergency medical services partners, our hospital partners, you know, we're getting it done there in Bertie, and we just cannot thank you enough. You can see the partially versus fully vaccinated. A couple of things I want to point out about this data versus the data that we shared in the previous slides is this is state allocated vaccine only. So for instance, those federal vaccines, those federal allocations are not included. This only pulls from CVMS. Another thing when you're looking at the percentages, they're basing this on the entire population, not the age specific groups. So that makes a difference as well. We also could see some data entry delays through this system, just depending on what, you know, the CVMS access is. And then obviously they only update this once a week. So, and then the holiday kind of threw this week off. As far as updates and information, you know, we continue to learn more about COVID-19 and how it spreads. It truly is a respiratory virus. So that is the primary way that it spreads. You can get it from touching a contaminated object. However, that is rare, but that is why we still encourage that hand washing. The symptoms, They definitely vary from person to person. And so that is why we truly do encourage anyone who is sick to stay home. You know, I think one thing that COVID has taught us is that, you know, we need to truly get back to basics. You know, what we teach our school children and others about staying well and being healthy, it really has proven true in this situation. And those simple steps and stopping and taking care of ourselves can really help everyone around us. We do know that those with underlying medical conditions, particularly if they're not well controlled, are at severe risk. So certainly we encourage these individuals to seek that vaccine because, again, that vaccine has proven extremely effective, near 100% in some situations, at preventing severe illness and death. And then when it comes to, again, protecting ourselves, those tried and true public health strategies truly make the biggest difference. Hand washing. I know, you know, my son is 9 years old now, and he knows that hand washing piece, and he knows his mama is going to get on him. That is the biggest piece for so many different illnesses. Using soap and water, the hand sanitizer, you know, my folks at work, they pick on me because I was the hand sanitizer person. I have it in my car. I have the wipes. I love it all because I've been doing this for a while now. And this really does make a difference in so many different areas, not just coronavirus, not just COVID-19, but with flu, with norovirus, with so many different bugs that are out there. Avoiding contact with others who are sick, covering your nose and your mouth, practicing that social distancing, and of course, staying home when you're sick. You know, fortunately right now, and I've got on a future slide showing some of the guidance and where we are with the state guidance. We saw our numbers. We are extremely encouraged by our numbers right now. Again, we likely will see activity, you know, in the future. This is a seasonal virus. Hopefully we can continue to make an impact on those future waves that are very, very possible. We will likely see this behave much like seasonal influenza. And if those numbers begin to increase again, it likely will come a time where the social distancing, the mask requirements, and those types of things will definitely come into play. So just a reminder on the social distancing, 3 feet can decrease your risk of spread from over 12% to just under 3%. And 6 feet doubles that protection. Face coverings are truly about the source control. You know, obviously there's many types of masks out there, and we've learned a lot about the masks and wearing of face coverings, but they truly do help, and they can decrease the risk of spread by 1/2 to 2/3. This was a study showing 139 clients spent time with two hairstylists, and none of them got sick because the hairstylists was actually the ones that were sick were wearing their face coverings. Hand washing, again, this is, I'll say it again, the tried and true. It can reduce the spread of respiratory illness by 20%, and it truly can keep us healthy in so many different ways. Current guidance, you know, face coverings, they are required in some settings as far as schools, childcare, children's day or overnight camps, healthcare settings. So we obviously still have them at the health department, transportation, prisons, and establishments that are providing shelter. Those are definitely required. And of course, business can choose to require face coverings, but there are currently no capacity limits or social distancing requirements. You know, I think this is definitely a great mental health break. But it's important, again, to continue that education, making sure that people understand how we can stay safe and healthy, encourage that vaccine. So that way, hopefully, if those numbers start to increase, we won't have to go back to this. We can find our new normal. And hopefully that new normal is pretty close to that old normal. All right. So that's really all we have. Mr. Betts, do you have anything else that you wanted to chime in on or any questions?
No, I think it sums it up well, but we would certainly entertain any thoughts or questions that any of you may have.
I would just like to say I serve on the Board of Health, and Ashley has done a phenomenal job from day one when Mr. Battle directed her to head this on. She's done just couldn't ask for anybody to do any more than what she's done. So thank you, Ashley, for all your work. I know I've said it in the health board meetings, but I just thought it was appropriate to say it here in front of everybody and on Zoom. So thank you so much, Ashley.
Well, thank you so much. We have an amazing team, Mr. Betts. I think we are definitely family at ARHS, and we have come together, and we have amazing, amazing partners in each of our counties, and we cannot thank you all enough.
Mr. Betts, this is Commissioner Trent. I'd like to also concur what Chairman has said in reference to the shots that were given out at the high school. It was so well organized. You guys did an excellent job in getting this product and us getting it distributed with the help of you and the rest of your staff. I can't thank anymore the North Carolina Army National Guard for their assistance in that. We were processing, had five lines, and you could tell it was military back. The logistics was unbelievable, okay, of how they transported, got product to us, we got it into the field, and we were giving out, I think it's sometimes 1,200 vaccines a day, okay? And I just have to say I commend you and for what you do, and I thank you for your staff and everything.
Thank you very much. We appreciate everybody's support. You guys have been wonderful to work with, and it's just been a team approach all the way across the board. We couldn't do it alone.
It shows in the numbers, too. We got out there, one of the first counties to start it, and the numbers prove, you know, that we were working hard at it. So thank you so much. Anybody else? All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Take
thank
care.
Thank you all. Have a great night.
All right, so next on the agenda is our county manager, Mr. Juan Vaughn, with our presentation of the proposed budget for the 21-22 calendar year. Fiscal year, excuse me.
Thank you, Jerry. Bertie County Board of Commissioners, Bertie County citizens, taxpayers, and everyone attending this meeting virtually and in person, good evening. It is my pleasure and with excitement that I present our budget plan for fiscal year 2021-2022. Now, I'll go ahead and give everyone a heads up. There's some good news in here, and there's also a little bit some bad news in here. So let's get started. This week, I will just give you some highlights from my budget message, but the more in-depth conversation we'll take with the commissioners in our upcoming board of commissioners work session, which we will confirm before we leave today. All right, here's a little bit of good news. Our ad valorem tax rate, there is not a proposed increase in that tax rate. A few years ago, back in 1920, we went to, before I got here, it was raised 3.5 cents. So we're still there at 86.5 cents. If all of the requests were fulfilled that were submitted by our department heads, if those requests would have been fulfilled, we would have seen an increase of 33 cents. which would have taken us well over a dollar, almost a dollar and 20 cents. So good news, no increase in our tax rate. Now, our budget. What is it composed of? Of course, we have the general fund, which we'll talk a little bit more about in just a second. We have the social services fund, 911 fund, capital school reserve, water district fund, as well as our telephone system fund. Now, taking a look at our fund balance that has been appropriated. This is where a little bit of the bad news comes in, but we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. There's also some good news on this slide. So, as you can see, for the past few years, fund balance was appropriated. Their original fund balance appropriation has been well over a million. Back in 2017, it was 1.2 million. 2018, it was 1.5, almost 1.6. 2019, 1.9. And then for fiscal year 2020, it was 1.7. But you'll also notice at the end of the fiscal year, the fund balance appropriated was even more than that. Okay. good news is, as of last year, we did not appropriate any fund balance. And hopefully, at the end of this fiscal year, you'll see that we should have a surplus. We should have some money added back to the fund balance. Okay? So now, for the proposed budget for 2022, there's also no fund balance appropriation.
Yes, sir.
Very happy and proud to say that. No fund balance appropriation in the recommended budget. So now, let's take a look at the general fund. As you can see, back in 2017, from 2017 to 22, our general fund expenditures, or just the budget for our general fund, was on a rise, on an increase, and it peaked at 25.4, almost $25.5 million. But last year, we began to decrease that. We increased the departmental budgets by about 5%. And this year, we're still trying to maintain it and surpass it where possible. So we were able to decrease the general fund budget by over $500,000, almost $600,000. The general fund budget was decreased. And we're trying to maintain that. Again, just taking a look at our expenditures, each line item, if it's something. Try not to budget money just because it has been budgeted before. We're budgeting on trend and what it takes to meet the needs of our citizens. All right, so let's take a look at a couple of factors that affected our revenues. So, of course, last year was our revaluation year, and our total valuation increased about 5% after last year's revaluation, and the tax collection rate also increased. In 1819, it was a little bit over 97%. Well, in 1920, it was almost 98%. So we're doing very well with our tax collection. And even as of right now, or as of April of this year, we were almost at 97% again. So we're expecting to meet what we have been meeting, which is that well above 97%. So now, the American Rescue Plan. For our state and local fiscal recovery funds. As you all know, federal government passed this and is huge amount of money that it is giving to local governments. And our share of our portion of the pie is $1.8 million. And what can we do with this?
That's half.
For this year,
right?
1.8. Yes, correct. The total amount that we should receive is 3.6. But so far, we have received 1.8, and we're expecting to receive an additional 1.8 in a year.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you. So now, exactly what can these funds be used for? That's something that myself and I have been studying for the past few weeks to determine exactly what eligible expenses or eligible uses of these funds are. So we will take a look at this a little bit deeper in our upcoming work session, but some allowable uses include payroll expenses for employees who are dedicated to responding and mitigating COVID-19 response, of course, supplies and equipment, and even some infrastructure. So, of course, we have a list of items that can be funded, and, of course, we'll get into that in our work session when it comes to prioritizing exactly what those projects will be. Take a look at some of our factors that affected our expenditures. Some more good news, all right? There is a cost of living adjustment. It's a modest cost of living adjustment, but it is a cost of living adjustment. Right now, it's at 1%. And after the budget was balanced, this was the last thing that was done. After we balanced the budget, I went back and took a look. All right, we said it was going to cost us about $65,000. For a 1% cost of living adjustment. So I went back through and reduced the budget by that amount because it's important. If we're going to increase our revenues, increase our expenditures, it's important to take them back down unless we are going to increase our revenues. Okay. All right. So we're trying to not increase our overall costs. So that 1% increase has been included. All right, so again, we're trying to maintain those decreases in our departmental budgets. Again, we're still meeting the needs of citizens. If it's something that's needed, we're going to do what we can to get it. But extra spending has been reduced significantly. And this year, we have continue to temporarily eliminate some positions in departments where there are vacancies. We continue to not fund certain positions until other positions are filled and there's actually a need for these positions. So examples of this include 5 positions in the Sheriff's Department, 5 positions in non-emergency transport, as well as 1 position in administration that has, again, was not included in this year's, the proposed budget for 2022. What expenditures are still included? We still have that general fund appropriation for $30,000 each to all of the fire departments, they're 12 in Bertie County. And we still have special appropriations to our public schools, our community college, and of course, our Bertie Martin Regional Jail. And for the most part, those contributions to these agencies has not decreased. For the most part, it's level funding that you'll see that is in my proposed budget. But again, we will take a look at what those exact figures are in the budget work session. Capital purchases. There are a few capital projects or purchases included in this year's budget, and they include storage building for the cooperative extension facility. That's the new facility that was just finished, and something else that is included. We've included some cameras for register of deeds something that the Register of Deeds would like to get started, which would be bringing passports to Bertie County, something that is not available here or in our surrounding county. So that is something that could generate some additional revenue. So hopefully that's an expense that will, of course, take care of itself. Now, there are other purchases that we can achieve or get completed by way of the American Rescue Plan. And again, that is something that we will take a look at our work session. But many of the things that are requested by the Sheriff's Department as well as emergency services are items that are allowable under the American Rescue Plan, as well as the IT as well. Oh, I have to mention elections, voting equipment, that is something that we pretty much committed to and that we absolutely should do, as well as the tax software with VIS. Now, let's take a look at our water fund. And commissioners, you all have seen this particular slide, and it just shows the yellow bar shows the revenues for the water fund, and the green bar shows the expenditures. So looking back, going back to 2016, 2017, that year there was a surplus. We had clearly had more revenues than expenditures. But as we went to 17 and 18, 19 and 20, well, 17, 18, 18, 19, and 19, 20, the reverse happened. Our expenditures heavily outweighed our revenues. So that is why we talked for so long about that water increase, an increase in our water rates, which was just recently passed. So citizens will see a slight increase in their water bills, but our biggest commercial users received the largest increase. So now, taking a look at our revenues, or let's say our expenditures for our water fund, our water fund budget. Going back to 2017, we budgeted $2.8 million. These numbers come directly from the budget ordinance back from 2017, 18, 19, 20, and then this last year of 2.8. So that's how much, that's how big the water department's budget has been going into the fiscal year. Going into next fiscal year, 2022, we have dropped that down significantly, over 6%, and we now have a budget of $2.6 million. So it's key for us to reduce those expenditures so, again, we can start having a surplus and not having our expenditures exceed our revenues. So that was major for the War Department to do that. Mr. Spivey and I, Board of Superintendent and I have spoken, and one thing that we did to do that was this water meter replacement that has been taking place. Instead of doing so much of it next year, let's space it out over the course of 3 years so that we're not doing so much at once. So I'm happy about getting that number down. So now, what's next? Of course, we will have our work session, hopefully this week. Again, we'll confirm that in just a little while. We do have our budget hearing scheduled for June 14th here at 6 o'clock. And after that, of course, if there's any feedback, I'm sure the commissioners and I will absolutely consider that. And then we will plan to adopt it very shortly thereafter. I have to thank my staff for contributing to this and for all of the department heads, all of the employees contributed to this in some way, but I definitely have to thank my department heads for making the sacrifices to tighten the purse strings and be conservative in their spending and managing their budgets. And they've done just that. And so again, thank you to my finance director, assistant county manager as well. Thank you for your attention. And that's all I have. Are there any questions about our proposed budget for 2021-2022?
I would just like to say, our own budgets at home, if you keep dipping in that checking account and dip in it and dip in it, eventually it's going to run out. Well, that's what's happened with it, and it's not anything, it's things that we had to do. It wasn't anything that we necessarily wanted to do, but it was capital projects that we had to do. But now that our balance is kind of on the low side, and Mr. Vaughn has been tasked to build that back up, and I thank you for the hard work that you and your staff have done on this. It is always interesting to see where it is now, and then we will meet as commissioners hopefully one day this week, and we will start the process of going line by line and seeing what we can do to even further cut it or add some places. But if we add, then we got to take away from other places. So we'll see what happens. So thank you so much. Are there any questions?
To make a comment, let me say to County Manager Vaughn and his entire staff, William especially, Assistant County Manager, I am so pleased see a budget presented to us that does not calls for the use of fund balance. The budget that we have this year would have been another budget in excess had we not early in the year decided to cut out 5% of the spend so that it would come in within balance. And now it looks like we're going to have a surplus. That's great. But when you look back over the last many years, I've been here 8 years, but every time a budget's been presented to us, it's been a draw on fund balance. Every citizen knows that you cannot run a business or a household or anything else. As the chair said, when you draw, you put on paper that you're going to take money out of your savings in order to balance the expenditures of the current year. That gets old after a while and it runs out. So this is a great starting point for us. My hope, though, to my fellow commissioners is that this is not an endpoint, because we're going to have an opportunity to go through all of this and find out if there are any additional opportunities so we can do additional good things. I mean, it's great to see a 1% increase across the board to our staff, but I think they deserve a heck of a lot more than that. And if we can find that money in the budget, then we ought to own that responsibility and try to do it, because they certainly deserve it. So anyway, thank you all for it. It's a great starting point for us.
County Manager and staff, I personally appreciate the hard work y'all done. I definitely concur with Commissioner Weston when doing the work section. I would like for us to really dig deep, see can we give our hardworking county employees, including yourself, more than a 1% raise. $50,000 a year, $5. Where are we good with? Thank you for your time.
And thank you so much. So, I don't, Mr. Scarborough, I don't know that you have been formally introduced to the county. I couldn't remember. But, yeah, I know Mr. Vaughn is happy to have you on board, especially just in time for the budget process. So, thank you. All right, so no board appointments?
No.
Good. All right. Consent agenda, and I'm going to do these separately. Anyways, you'll see why. But I'll take a motion to approve the minutes for the regular meeting 1-4-21, and we are behind on these, but Ms. Cartwright is working diligently to catch them up.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll have a long list before our next meeting to approve. But is there a motion to approve
these
minutes?
The ones with the corrections or additions made by the attorney, right?
Yes.
Right? Okay, so yes. Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, so we have a long list of budget amendments. Mr. William, do you have anything to say?
Well, pretty much most of them is just basically adding revenue and increasing the expenses. A lot of it is actually reimbursement for coronavirus through FEMA, which I'm very glad to see that money come in. I'm very glad to see it come in for June 30th.
Yes.
So,
so it's not taking us 5 years to get our
right,
money
it's
back.
Not taking us 5 years to get that.
They're just not big checks. We'd like to have big checks.
Well, yeah, but I'll take anything I can get right now. But unless you want me to go down the list, no, I don't really see anything.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'll take a motion to approve all the budget amendments.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The Project Ordinance American Rescue Plan, the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery. So there is, we have to approve receiving this money.
Yes. You basically have to approve receipt of the money because I really can't do anything with it unless you give me direction to accept it. And what I have proposed, I've just done basic one-line entry for revenue and one-line entry for expenses just to document it. But after we get through our budget work session, start talking about it, those expenses will probably get detailed more once we decide how we're going to spend it.
Okay.
But for right now, I just want a placeholder so I can put the money in.
Gotcha. Some counties are saying no to it. We don't have that. In my opinion, we can't do that. So, yeah, I don't know why they would say
that. So. I think as long as we can find a legitimate reason to use it, we need to use it.
Yes.
Madam Chair, motion to accept and approve.
I second that.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then last on the consent agenda is the approval of the interlocal agreement with Washington County Inspection Services. And I will just add, we had one position that had not been filled in this department, and Mr. Chris Surgeon, when was his last, day with us?
It will be Friday.
This coming Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So he's leaving us and going to another county, and we wish him well, but that leaves us without an inspector. So mm-hmm. It's being proposed that we enter into a interlocal agreement with Washington County for inspection services. So I will take a motion to approve this agreement.
One question. Did we have a similar agreement with Hertford County? Was that still in force? Because we were doing some inspections for them. Because they don't have an inspector, and we were doing some major inspections for them. Is that still in existence?
I can reach out to Hertford County. Clearly, the way that Chris has been overwhelmed, I don't think he has been.
I think he was only doing the major ones, but I believe if you check that there was an interlocal agreement between them. And I don't want to make sure that we are not being held responsible for their coverage. We're looking to Washington to cover us.
Okay.
So we need to inform them if that exists.
And there was one.
Yeah,
there was
for us to help them. They were helping us.
And vice versa.
That's right.
Fire were helping us, and we were helping them with some other stuff. But that's been a couple of years back also. So whether it's been done away with, I don't know.
I don't think you've ever officially done away with it. However, since we don't have a building inspector that's qualified to fulfill the contract, I think it'd be void.
Okay. Cool.
But we might ought to notify Hartford County and say, hey.
Yeah.
We might need to form a similar agreement with someone else because we can't help.
Right.
All right.
You'll contact them, County Manager?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the general laws of the rules of Washington County. Congratulations.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is discussion items. Number one is designating a voting delegate for the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners annual conference, which will be held in August in Wilmington. Yes.
In the past, that's always been the chairman that's doing that.
And I would love to be able to do that.
Okay.
Are you okay with nominating yourself?
Okay. I am running for a seat on the National Association of County Commissioners Board of Directors. That voting will take place in July at the National Association Conference at our North Carolina meeting. So I will not be voting delegate at that point for that conference.
I may believe I misunderstood. I thought you were filling a North Carolina opening, no?
It is a North Carolina opening, but the voting will take place at a North Carolina meeting at the National Association. Yeah, so, yes, so I can be voting delegate.
Okay. Right. I'll make a motion that Chair Lee be the voting delegate.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Item number two under the discussion, we are going to postpone that if there's no objection and discuss that at our work session. There's some further discussion we want to do about the court systems and all that good stuff. So we're going to postpone that item. Next on the agenda is update on the ribbon cutting for the library and Blue Jay. So County Manager?
Yes, thank you, Chair Lee. We are on target with having the library and cooperative extension ribbon cutting. Been speaking with our maintenance director, Anthony Rasko, as he makes finishing touches and coming into some delays with in terms of the actual sign, taking a few weeks. And so he is requesting that we, but and I know it's already been done once, but he feels like some more time is needed in order for us to have it presentable.
All right. Did we have that scheduled? Tentatively scheduled?
We did. It was the last Monday in June, which is June 28th.
Okay.
And so he's would be great if we could have a push it back into July. And if you want to confirm a tentative date, we can, or we can wait and
yeah, let's
do it
wait
a little bit later until we know exactly when they'll be.
Everybody in favor of waiting?
Yeah, we'll make sure you're talking just the library. You're not talking about.
We're not talking about library and comprehensive. We're just talking about Blue Jay.
Blue Jay, okay.
Blue
gotcha.
Okay.
All right. And we had said it for Monday. So,
Senator Bazemore
could be there. Hey, what about the library?
We're on target.
We're on target.
We're on target with that.
Okay. All invitations have been sent?
Yeah, we're still sending them, but.
Okay.
Yes.
And what's the final date on that again? So everybody knows?
16.
June 16th, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, okay.
June 16th, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
I know that had shifted around a couple times also.
Yeah.
10 o'clock.
Wonderful. Any other discussion on that? Okay. Discussion for the 21 Burke T. Riverfest.
Okay.
County Manager?
LaShonda has, and I have been having some conversation, and she's been talking with various people who were a part of that team before, and it just comes down to exactly, exactly what we would like to do and the amount of money that we would like to spend, and I can turn it over to her, but she has spoken to a couple of owners of food trucks who may be available this summer if we can give them a potential date. So it's just a matter of, I guess, nailing down a date exactly what you all would like to see, how much money. Because, our hands are full, but we can make it work if it's something that you all absolutely would like for us to do.
I suggest that we put it on the agenda if we can for some brief discussion this week at the work session.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's going to be a full day at all.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a full day. Y'all are welcome to join us. It's going to be fun. Lord, forgive me for that one. All right, so confirmation of budget work session. He has June the 3rd on here. If that date does not work for somebody, please speak now, forever hold your peace. Okay.
What time we start? 10?
Nine.
As soon as you all want to get started,
I'll be up at 4:30, so I'm been here.
Well, eight of you all want, but it's up to you all. Nine is
we'll 9 is early enough.
Okay.
9 o'clock, June 3rd. We'll recess this meeting until June 3rd, 9 o'clock.
Okay. Commissioner's reports. Commissioner Roberts.
Well, I'd like to take the time to thank the veterans first. The ones that served, one that have served, one that is serving. You know, I just thank them for everything they do to help protect the country. You know, it's just been great things that they have done over the years, years and years, and they continue to do the same. And I think maybe, hopefully, next year, Berkeley County can do something for the veterans, if nothing but, you know, a speech in front of the courthouse or something, you know.
To that, it was planned, but because of COVID, we weren't sure. So it is going to be on Veterans Day instead of Memorial Day. But they were going to do it on Memorial Day, but were scared. They didn't know how COVID would be. So Thad White from the newspaper and somebody works with him on that. Lewis Hoggard organizes that.
Great. And the last comment I'd like to make, I'm begging the public, I'm pleading the public, please go out and get your vaccine so that we can get back to normal. There's no cost. Thank you.
Commissioner Trent?
Yes, ma'am. Again, I would like to also thank all of our veterans that paid the ultimate price overseas and in state with their lives, supporting our freedom and moving forward and getting this country the freedoms that we have. Coming from a military family, it's a very touching thing, especially when you see the sacrifice that these families have gone through. And I think that we owe our freedom, our right to do what we do to these veterans and the ones that passed away. And again, the ultimate sacrifice. I would like to also say that the Lewiston-Woodville Vitality and Educational Center has been CO'd. And it's 7,000 square feet, oversaw construction, remodeling on it. And hopefully by June, middle part of June, tail end of June, we'll start progressing forward as far as what's going to be held in there and what's going to be done with educational and things of that nature. It's very important that these type of things are being done in municipalities. I would like to thank KB Reynolds Foundation. I also like to thank Golden Leaf Foundation for the support, not only financial, but also working with us through a pandemic. I have to say, I've never built a building 7,000 square feet. The amount of COVID cases that were running, I mean, everybody knows how the county was. I think we had a total of 5 cases. One of my contractors, he got it, and then all of his whole family got it. We were shut down for months at a time just because of personnel and things of that nature. But again, it was a tough job, but it is now CO'd and done. So we're doing minor stuff to it, touching up paint, things of that nature, and getting it ready for a grand opening. There will be a grand opening on it. That date has not been set yet, but Lewiston-Woodville and myself will be getting together on that. The other thing I'd like to say is also Eddie Kane Steel, which is a steel company that is out of New Jersey. They have an office over in Ahoskie. They have bought the Golden Peanuts buildings. It's about 300,000 square feet, I believe, of
warehouse space there. They're talking about they're going to be setting up distribution and also manufacturing of steel. Is that correct, Steve? Steve Biggs, the economic developer, myself, Chair Lee, we met with them, I think it was last week, wasn't it? Week before last. They have a lot of things in store for Bertie County and for the surrounding area. I think he made the comment that eventually this thing could work into about 150 jobs. Okay. And again, this is what we do and what we try to do on a every year, get somebody in here. And we had another company, Steve, that just started that was over in the Cash Eye building. They do military and also police body armor,
high-speed
gear. Okay, I think they had a open deal over there where they hired like 43 or 48 people the first day. And they're out of, I believe, Texas.
We got place in Houston, one in Swansboro.
Okay, place in Houston. I think they got 200 employees over there. And they were
in Swansboro.
Very impressed with the people here in Bertie County, how hardworking they are and things of that nature. And they filled 43 positions in one day, I believe, correct?
Correct.
Okay, fantastic. That's all I got, Madam Chair.
Okay. Commissioner Atkins?
I would like to mention that we lost a Bertie County citizen this past week, who was very dear to me. Colonel Beale, Ms. Corona Beale, was 106 years old.
Wow.
Wow.
I did see that. Thank you. Commissioner Wesley.
Yeah, I'd like to join the other commissioners in thanking our veterans for their service. Like some of you, I come from a military background. I grew up as a military brat, so I understand the importance of service. And I think, I'm glad, I hope next year, Ron, you're right, that we have an opportunity to do something very special in recognition around Memorial Day. That would be very important. Last week, I had the opportunity, even though I was recovering at home, but to speak to the General Assembly of North Carolina around broadband and the importance of broadband, especially to rural communities. And I gave them not just what it means to the state, because it means different things. If you're an urban county like Wake or Mecklenburg, or you're a small county like Bertie in rural areas, broadband can be different. So what I talked about is that counties need the flexibility to determine how broadband and funds are spent. You know, most of the times things come down from the state and there's very little flexibility in terms of how counties spend it. We have different needs. A county like Wake that's trying to, service a major business coming in, like a lot of you know, it's coming into Wake County. They're looking at, bandwidth, right? Because these companies have to service worldwide clients. Here in rural county, we're looking to bring and attract businesses, work with small businesses to grow businesses, right? And it's also important around education. I gave them some real examples of how when businesses closed right here in this county, some workers who didn't have broadband at home had to search out places so they could continue to get a paycheck, right? And they were meeting in all kinds of places that just were late, enabled them to go in and work for a few hours. We had mothers who were sitting in the parking lot of Bojangles in their car 8 hours a day just because that's the only place they had an internet connection, right? We had school kids who were trying to do homework on cell phones. Almost impossible. Now, all of our kids have tablets, right, that we give them. But if you don't have connectivity, that's nothing but a paperweight, right? So it's important to counties like us that broadband is taken seriously, and that if we get an infrastructure bill, that broadband needs to be a part of it. Tomorrow, and the time tomorrow is 11:30 to 12:10. If you look on North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, I am interviewing Senator Tillis on the issue of broadband, and to find out what his commitment is, and to if he favors giving counties that flexibility that we're going to need. And if he is going to, in fact, support broadband as a portion of the infrastructure bill, if passed. I think it's important to know where our representatives stand. So I've been asked to speak with him and see where he stands and his ideas about what we can do. So I'm really pleased to be able to do that. And the last thing I'll say is that in our work session coming up this week, and I know we haven't set it exact date yet, right?
Yeah,
I want to say to citizens, you know, we had about 20-some citizens, a number I saw on the Zoom call today. The meeting Thursday will be about how we're going to spend your money. I remember a couple of years ago, we did a budget meeting. We had two people sitting in the audience. One was a county employee and one citizen, and we didn't have Zoom. Citizens, you have an opportunity to be on the line to see how your elected officials are spending your tax dollars. I think we're going to do a great job. But I want you to be there. I want you to hear it. And I want you to know what we're doing and what we're not doing. So I encourage you. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess it was yesterday. I put on Facebook, I'm very grateful to the men and women of the military that sacrificed, paid the ultimate sacrifice. But I'm also very thankful to God for bringing my veteran home from Iraq. So thank you to all those that paid the ultimate sacrifice, but even those of you that served. I'm looking at two right in front of me, and I'm, you know, thank you for serving our country in that way. So, so Saturday is a big day for the county. There's lots going on, but I do hope that you will take the time to come out to Tri-County Airport, and we will have open house, show off our brand new terminal, and have it's going to be a fly-in, and Steve can help me if I leave anything out. He serves on that authority with me. But we will have a fly-in. We'll be offering plane rides. The last I heard, it was going to be 15 cents a pound or $15. I'm going with the $15 because I'm not telling them how much I pay. And I think I'll come out cheaper. But anyways, it's going to be, we're going to have the High Patrol, the Marine Patrol will have their educational trailer there as well as their plane. We'll have Elizabeth City State University, which is huge for our children. Who else? Yeah, there's going to be Heritage House Food Truck and Mr. E's Kitchen from Orlando there. The Forestry Service will be there. Anyways, it's going to be a big day, and we're excited. We've invited a lot of our local officials, so we're excited. Come out and join us. It's from 10 to 4, and just take a look at our brand new terminal. It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm super proud of it. I don't have anything else. County Manager.
I have just a few things. Saturday before last, a couple of the commissioners and I attended the graduation of Bertie County Early College, and it was a great ceremony. I always enjoy seeing the high schoolers graduate and receive that diploma. We have also been invited to the high school graduation, which will also be on Saturday at 9. So airport at 10, graduation at 9. On another note, our next, outside of the work session, in the month of July, our regular meeting is scheduled for July 12th, although I think some of you would be coming back from NACO. NACO is July 9th through the 12th, so that's something for us to consider, rescheduling that meeting, and we don't have to do it now. We can do it at the work session, but that is something for us. We can, if you all have a date in mind and want to take care of it tonight, we can absolutely do that. But I'm thinking it may be a need to reschedule the July 12th meeting.
Yeah, if y'all want to look at your calendars, I'm so far mine's clear. After you know, budget to be over and all that good stuff. So, but right now it's clear. We'll see how if it stays that way. But we can have it later on in the week.
14th?
When? As soon as that week would probably be better.
What about the 7th of July? So that we don't get too close to the meeting.
Won't we be traveling up?
I'm going to think the meeting conference is the 9th and 10th. Some of us are going
to. Okay. 7th. Yeah, that would. 7th. The sooner in that month would be better. Yeah.
Our county manager is expecting a baby in July, so mid-July, so we need to have it before he goes away. So, is everybody good for the 7th? You think? Okay. Yeah, we'll discuss it. Y'all, yeah. Steve, and we could have it the 5th or the 6th. I mean, but that's holiday. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's all I have.
County attorney?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Next on the agenda is the 3-minute comment section. Has anybody got any public comments? LaShonda, are there any public comments?
Jelly, no public comments at this time.
Okay. Well, I will take a motion to recess this meeting and re-adjourn on Thursday. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Good to go. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, y'all.